Today's scripture reading will be Esther chapter 4, verses 13 through 16. Then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, "Do not think to yourself that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silent at this time, relief and deliverance will rise up for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, "Go, gather all the Jews to be found in Susa, and hold a fast on my behalf. And do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my young women will also fast as you do. Then I will go to the king, though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish."
Throughout the years, there have been some remarkable endings to college football games. Been blessed and privileged and horrified and upset to watch many of them. One of my very first ones was back in 1992. University of Tennessee was playing the University of Alabama. We had lost to the Crimson Tide 10 years in a row. This was going to be our year. We had them all set up. It was going to happen. It was going to end just like we wanted it, and it didn't. They ended up scoring a two-point conversion. We ended in a tie. That was a terrible game, horrible day. And then there was the few years ago against Alabama yet again. We're going to beat them. We're unranked. They're ranked. We're going to win the game. All we got to do is kick a field goal. When out of nowhere, an enormous fat man jumps up, blocks the kick, and we lose yet again. And then last year, we had Florida beat. And then on a 4th-and-14 play, we somehow give up a 65-yard touchdown. And yet again, Florida wins by 1 point. Heartbreak in college football is like almost nothing else. Because when you invest yourself in it, it absolutely rips your heart out to watch. And it's not just Tennessee fans. There's a certain Alabama fan out there, a few of them, that might remember something called a kick six. We won't go into those details. But it hurts when your team loses. But perhaps no loss in college football history is as baffling and befuddling as that which was suffered by the Michigan Wolverines this past college football season. Against Michigan State, the Spartans should be up by a lot. They were ranked, Michigan at the time was ranked, but ranked very lowly. Team wasn't supposed to be very good. They had a first-year coach and kind of a hodgepodge of players out on the field. Michigan State should have been up by a bunch. But we find ourselves at the end of the game, and there's almost no time left. All Michigan has to do is punt the ball away successfully, and they will have beaten a top five Michigan State Spartan team. Sounds easy, right? They've got a fifth-year kicker back there. This guy has seen it all. He's a former rugby player. He's been there, done that. Got the shirts to prove it. All he has to do is catch the ball, kick the ball. Time will expire. Michigan will win. It did not happen that way. The ball was snapped. The kicker reaches his hands out, and the ball skips right through his hands. All is not lost still. All the boy has to do is jump back and fall on it. Son, don't try to be a hero. You're a fifth-year senior. Fall on the ball. Time will expire. It's okay, man. He panics and tries to pick up the ball, at which point Michigan State scoops it, runs it back, and wins the football game in the craziest ending to a football game, perhaps, of all time. That kicker's name that day was a gentleman by the name of Blake O'Neill. Now, what most folks have forgotten since that October 17th game between Michigan and Michigan State is that earlier in the game, Blake O'Neill had pulled off one of the rarities in college football. He blasted an 80-yard punt completely flipping the field position. And at that time, he was the hero of the day because he had done something that nobody thought was possible. An 80-yard kick, folks, is phenomenal. And most of his was in the air. It was an unreal kick. We would have expected that young man to come out of that game high-fiving and all about himself because he had gotten an 80-yard kick. But then at the end of the game, he's got the drop, the fumble, and he will now be in college football lore for all the wrong reasons. Now, we would expect a gentleman such as this, a player such as this, to hide their head for days, wouldn't we? Oh, they're not going to want to talk. They're going to do a Cam Newton, and they're going to run off from the interview. Michigan doesn't open their players up to interviews immediately following the game, but the following Tuesday was their media day. And everybody wondered, would Michigan have the guts to put Blake O'Neal out there and let him stand before the rabid fans and media of the University of Michigan? Truth? They hadn't planned on it. But Blake O'Neal walked into the coach's office and into the AD's office and said, I want to meet with the media myself. He had stayed off of social media, hadn't answered any Twitter questions or Facebook inquiries or any Instagram postings. But he wanted to go before the media that day, and he wanted to let them know that this did not define his life. He wanted them to understand that though millions upon millions of people had watched this happen, and that though millions and millions of Michigan fans were upset, this would not define his life. He seized a moment in time to take advantage of an opportunity afforded him to say, this is still a game, and I'm still going to live my life. What a great opportunity that he seized. Today we're continuing on with our sermon series in which we're examining the themes of the 66 books of the Bible. Today we're pulling off at the land of Esther. We're going to get off here and we're going to notice a couple of things about the book of Esther. Of course, Esther is a story that is familiar to many of us, and perhaps even the passage that we're examining today is one of the more familiar passages that take place in the book of Esther. Today I want us to examine who she was, and realistically I want us to see what lessons can we gain from her. The theme of the book of Esther, as we pull off the interstate and as we cruise on into this exit, we see our signpost. And our signpost tells us that the theme of the book of Esther is for such a time as this. Folks, the book of Esther, in the main, is all about one opportunity afforded to one girl and one girl seizing it the way that God wanted her to do so. This morning, I want you to think about the opportunities in your life. I want you to think about the moments that you have. I want you to ask yourself a very real question. Are you seizing the moments that God has given you? Are you taking advantage of them? I'll tell you what I'm finding the older I get. Opportunities are everywhere, but it feels like time is just slipping away, doesn't it? Moments with your children, moments with your spouse, moments with your friends and family, even moments to come in assemble at worship services such as this. The older you get, the faster it feels like time is going, doesn't it? Today I want us to examine this idea of for such a time as this. I want you to see what it was that this young girl carried with her as she seized this moment. And I want you to think about the fact that you yourself carry with you many of these same things. First of all, for such a time as this, Esther was there to bear a burden. For such a time as this, Esther was there to bear a burden. Folks, have you ever stopped to consider all that this young girl carried upon her back? We learn over in Esther chapter 2 that she was orphaned, had to be taken in by a cousin by the name of Mordecai, who took her in and treated her like a daughter, loved her, cared for her, and tried his best to provide for her. She had lost her family, folks. Think about this. She was a captive in a captive land. She had lost freedom. So many burdens lay upon this young child. And here she is. Can we just be honest? She's about to lose her innocence. Because she's about to be afforded a peek behind the veil, a look behind the curtain. She's about to see into the inner court of the king and know all of the political backstabbing that went on in the political structure of that day. This young girl, let's just say it like this, she carried some awfully, awfully heavy burdens. And we might think, well, you know what? She had enough to be getting on with. No, not yet. Not yet. Instead, we need to look at some of the additional burdens that were placed upon her. We know that there was, of course, a king Ahasuerus. And he had a governor or a prime minister there by the name of Haman. Haman was, we might just put it like this, Haman's a bad guy in this story. Let's just lay all of our cards on the table. Haman is the bad guy. Here's what Haman is going to seek to do. Throughout this book, he is going to seek to get revenge upon Mordecai for a slight that he suffered at his hands. And in so doing, what he wants to do is what Hitler would seek to do in the previous century. Eradicate the Jews from the planet. He wants one day to take care of all the Jews. Get them off the face of the earth. Can we just be blunt here for a moment? He wants to kill God's people. Wipe them off the face of the earth. The king gives his permission. The king gives his ring and allows a signet to be made. A seal to be sealed. An edict and a command to be given. That the Jews on the 13th day of the 12th month would be killed. Mordecai hears of this, and of course, he being a Jew is distraught. He's worried. He's concerned. But he knows that he's got an ace in the hole. He's got a card he can still play that's in his back pocket, and that is his cousin. This girl that he's taken in and treated as a daughter, Esther, she is now the new queen, selected back in chapter 2. And in chapter 4, and in particular verse number 8, he sends word, but not just word. I need you to see this for what it is. He's not just sending word or a commandment. Folks, what he's doing is he's also sending a burden to be placed upon this young girl's back. Now, let me pause here for just a moment. Let's make sure we're understanding something. Realistically, there have been estimates made on the age of Esther, anywhere from 14 years old up to 24 years old. In either case, this is a young person. This is a young girl with big burdens being placed upon her back. And in this case, her cousin Mordecai, this man she thinks of as the substitute father, he is actually saying, go in, get the ear of the king, and you've got to help me save our people. Now down in verse 11, I want you to notice what she says. Because this will outline for you the great burden that was upon this young girl's back. Down in verse 11, she says that no one can just go before the king. Because if they do, then the punishment is very clear. They will be, what? Put to death. I know that so often we say it's just not fair. Esther could certainly have tilted her head back and screamed that, couldn't she? She could have looked up to the sky and said, you know what, I've got enough burdens. I don't need one more. But instead, I want you to consider this. Though Esther carried burdens, she, like many who had gone before and many who have come after, was not on her own. She went, for instance, with the protection of the Lord. She went with the protection of the Lord. Why? Well, because this was part of God's plan, folks. Never kid yourself. She went with the protection of the Lord. Reminds us a lot of Moses back over in the book of Exodus. Exodus chapter 3, and in particular verse number 14. There we're told that Moses was having, of course, his excuse fest with God, where he tries to come up with every conceivable reason why he himself can't go into the land of Egypt and lead God's people out. And in this case, he's saying, oh, who should I say sent me? They're going to want to know. And so God says, you will take with you, I am. Tell them, I am has sent you. Folks, that's God's way of saying, Moses, stop worrying. I'm going to protect you. But not only did Esther, like Moses, function with the protection of God, but she also went under the promises of God. Boy, God's promises, aren't they amazing, folks? Aren't God's promises so wonderful? Because we know that when God makes a promise, what does God do? He carries it out. God doesn't break a promise to us. Think about over again in the book of Exodus. Back over in the book of Exodus, in particular, chapter 3, verse number 8. There we learn as God is speaking there to Moses. He tells Moses that he has come that he might deliver his people from bondage and take them to that promised land. That land that flows with what? Milk and honey. That land that is so good, so great, so wonderful, and has been prepared. Folks, can I tell you what Exodus chapter 3, verse number 8 is? It's a promise. It's a promise. It's a promise. Esther's still functioning under those same promises of God. But not only that, but I also want you to consider this. Esther is also functioning under the provision of God. She's got His protection, she's got His promise, she's also got His provision. Over in Esther chapter 2, verse number 17, you'll recall that the big thing going on here at the early stages of the book of Esther is the search for the new queen. The previous queen, Vashti, hadn't done what the king commanded. And so he's on the look for a new queen. Many are being brought before him. He's talking to them, testing them, and trying to figure out which one he wants. Well, this young girl, Esther, she is prepared and she is brought before the king. And I want you to notice what happens there in verse number 17 of Esther chapter 2. She finds grace and favor in his sight. Now I know that some might say, well, she was very pretty, she was very attractive. All of that's fine, folks. But I tell you what, if you can't look at Esther chapter 2 and verse 17 and see that God had a plan for this, I can't help you. Folks, this is all a part of God's plan. So often we carry a burden on our back and we say, Lord, it's not fair. But we forget that though it may not be quote-unquote fair according to earthly standards, we forget that we've got these same benefits that Esther had. We look at her and we say, oh, that's not fair that young girl had to bear that burden, go into that king where she might lose her life when she got there. It's not fair that this young girl had to give up so much. It's just not fair. But folks, she had the protection, the promise, and the provision of God going with her, and so do you today. This morning, I could have handed out a notebook to each and every one of you today. And I could have said, in this notebook, I want you to write down every burden that you've got on your back. Now, some of you are automatically thinking, Rusty, don't just give me one notebook. I'll fill that bad boy up. I'll fill that one up. You better give me two. A lot of times we feel that way, don't we? That our burdens are endless. How often do we make the statements, Lord, this is too much for me to bear? Say it a lot, don't we? Let me give you some good news. The good news is you also have the protection of your God. Psalm chapter 121 in particular, verses 1 and 2 there. I love how the psalmist phrases this. I lift up my eyes to the hills. Now I know there that of course many have speculated that he's speaking of the hills that surrounded Jerusalem. I lift up my eyes to the hills. I want to suggest to you though that those same hills, they can also be those burdens that weigh so heavy on us. How often do your burdens look like great hills, great mountains? You know what David says though? I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where comes my help? My help comes from the Lord, maker of heaven and earth. Folks, God's given you His protection. You say, Rusty, my hills are tall, my burdens are great. You've got God's protection. You also got God's promise. Galatians chapter 3 in particular, verse number 29, there He is speaking to those who have been baptized into Christ. Those who have put Him on in baptism, those who have obeyed the gospel, He's speaking to them. He says, if you are in Christ, then you are heirs according to that promise made to Abraham. Folks, you are then God's selected people. You're open, available, and able to all of the promises God makes. But also, as you bear your burdens, know this, you've got the provision of God. Folks, God has made provision for you. You've been on His heart, you've been on His mind, you've been in His plans, you've been in His work ever since before the beginning of time. Before you were thought of, before any of us were thought of, before your parents' parents' parents were thought of, you were on God's mind. I love Matthew chapter 28 and verse 20. There Christ has given His disciples their instructions following His resurrection. And He says, and lo, I am with you. How often? Every now and then. When I got time. No, always. Even to the end of the age. Folks, that's God showing you He's made provision on your behalf. For such a time as this, though, folks, we are here to bear our burdens. The good news is, we don't bear them on our own. But let's talk about one other concept before we close out this morning. For such a time as this, Esther, had come to make some sacrifices. Esther had come to make some sacrifices. None of us like that word sacrifice, do we? Because at some point we start feeling like, you know what, I'm giving more than anybody else in the room. Esther could have felt that way, couldn't she? What about when her cousin, that father figure in her life, sent word to her and said, Esther, go into the king, get his ear, help save your people, placing that burden upon her. And she wrote back and said, if I go in there, the only punishment that is likely for me is death. And that's when he came back to her. That's when he laid opportunity at her door. He made it clear to her that if she chose not to help God's people, that he would provide another way, wouldn't he? Because God always does. But that who knows whether she is coming to the kingdom for such a time as this. What's remarkable is that this young lady, this young girl, this one with all the burdens, this one who has made so many sacrifices already. In Esther chapter 4, in verse number 16, she speaks back. And she tells them to go in and fast on her behalf. Pray for her. Because she's going to go into that king's court, that king's room. And I love how she puts this. If I perish, I perish. Folks, she's still willing to sacrifice more. She didn't hit some magical limit and say, that's it, given enough. Folks, I don't read that anywhere in the Bible. I challenged our young people this morning in our Bible class, handed them all Bibles, and I said, I want y'all to show me where in the Bible does it say that young people are the future of the church. Because the point I was making to them is they're not the future, they're the now. They are the church. Need to be involved. Need to be in doing this. Need to be helping. Folks, in much the same way, I would challenge anyone in here today, show me where in the Bible it says that there's some magical limit of sacrifice that we should give up. Here's what I do know, though. For the sacrifices that she made, Esther received more than equal compensation. Folks, God bless Esther, if you don't mind me saying so. Esther chapter 5, and verses 2 and 3, she went in there, and you know what she found in the eyes of the king? Favor. She found favor. She wasn't killed. How unusual is that? She should have been by all accounts and by all rights. But the king extended his scepter. She touched it and was allowed to speak. And she found favor. Not only that though, but Esther, all of her wildest imaginings and dreams, they came true. How wonderful is that? Over in Esther chapter 9, verse number 1. The day has come. This is the day that Haman had been planning for. Of course, by this point, Haman's not around to see it. He's been hung high and laid low. But by this point, this is the day that the Jews are to be eradicated. Their enemies are to experience a great victory over them. It's the 13th day of the 12th month of Adar. This is to be the day. But God gives the Jews the victory. Beyond their wildest imaginings. Folks, can we lay a few things out for our examination real quick? Aren't we called upon to make some sacrifices in our lives? Doesn't Romans chapter 12 verses 1 and 2 make it clear to us that we've got to sacrifice some things? That we've got to in fact sacrifice ourselves, our bodies as living sacrifices? That we've got to be conformed to His way of thinking, not transformed by this world? What about 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse number 15? There it makes it clear to us that we've got to sacrifice some time. You say, what does 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 15 have to do with time? Well, there it says, study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Can I tell you this? Study takes time, folks. You say, oh, Rusty, I don't have time. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. If you don't have time, you better make time for God's Word. Can I tell you this? When you sacrifice for God, it comes back to you in abundance. So many times we say, well, Rusty, I feel like I've had to give up so much to follow God. I feel like I've had to give up so many things just to serve Him. I've had to give up friends. I've had to give up, let's just say it, I've had to give up fun. Can I tell you what you've given up to follow God in many cases, folks? You've given up sin. You've turned away from this world and you've turned to that world which is to come. And oh, by the way, God rewards you and will reward you richly. I love what the psalmist says in Psalm 23 and verse number 6. There he says, surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell where? In the house of the Lord forever. How great is that? Folks, anything you've got to give up here on this earth is more than worth that home in heaven. It's more than worth that. You say, yeah, but I've had to give up some time too. Let me tell you this. Life is so short. Has anyone ever noticed that? Life is so short. James chapter 4, verse 14 says that it's like a vapor or a mist that appears for a little while, and then what does it do? It vanishes away. Folks, life is short. But I tell you this, God is willing, ready, and able to grant you eternal life. John chapter 3, verse number 16. You say, Rusty, but I've had to give up so much fun, so many great things here on earth. Folks, what you've given up is that which is perishable, that which is corrupt. And you know what 1 Corinthians chapter 15, 53 says? That we must all give up that which is perishable to put on that which is imperishable. Give up that which is corrupt to take on that which is incorrupt and incorruptible. Folks, any sacrifice you make here on earth for God, it's going to be more than worth it in that which is to come. Let me pause really fast before we close out this lesson, because I want to mention something to you. Because a lot of times, folks will hear a lesson such as this and they'll say, well, he's talking about sacrifices I make here for rewards that I get there. Let me make something clear to you. Living the life of a Christian here on earth is more than reward. Folks, there are blessings that come your way every day for being a child of the living God today. It's not always about looking forward and say, well, yeah, one day in heaven. Folks, let me tell you something. You're blessed by God for serving Him today, today, today. Now, let me ask you this question. There are opportunities out there for you. Now, are you suffering with some burdens today? Sure you are. You're drawing air. Are you making some sacrifices today? Yeah, you made them yesterday. And by the way, spoil surprise for you. You're going to make them tomorrow as well. But for such a time as this, you're here to serve God. Are you seizing your opportunities? Are you taking advantage of what God has given you right here, right now? I tell you what He's given you right now. He's given you right now a moment in time to obey the gospel. Now, this isn't the only time. We don't just say, well, the only time a person can obey the gospel is when the invitation is extended. No, this is a convenient time. Certainly not the only time. But I tell you this, it may be the last time you have. Have you obeyed? More importantly than have you, will you obey? You're here today and you never obeyed the gospel. This is the time. This is the place. This is the opportunity for such a time as this. You're here right now. For such a time as this, perhaps you're here to come back. You've walked away. You've turned your back and now you're ready to come home. Then come home. Stop hesitating. Stop thinking about it. Stop saying, well, when I get all the fun out of my life, then I'm going to come forward. No, stop it. Stop it. Make things right today. If there's any way that we can help you, we want to encourage you and invite you. Won't you come for such a time as this, as we stand and sing?